Hello, everyone. If you've listened to the show for any period of time, you have heard us mention in passing multiple ways to tackle the college problem, the college solution. That's what we were trying to provide. In a world where college increasingly looks like it's going to cost, I don't know, $200,000 for an undergraduate degree, that's the market price. That doesn't seem doable or reasonable. It doesn't seem like we should just accept that. There has to be a way to do it smarter. And so over the last 3+ years, as individuals have brought something to us, it's come on our plate, we have just shared it with you. And many of you have said this is probably some of the more valuable content you've heard on this platform just because it's where you are. You're dealing with this with your kids. So anything that you can get that can help decrease or lower the burden of that expected college tuition is incredibly valuable. But you see the flaw in this strategy. We're just waiting. You know, there's a community of maybe approaching 1 million people that check in with this show and listen to this show periodically. And there's those of you that listen to every single episode that's produced, and you keep waiting for something that you already know about to be mentioned on this show. And that just seems like random chance if we happen to do it. And so when we realized that that was the flaw, we were like, what would it look like to solve that? So we put the request out to the community. What are your college hacks? What are your solutions for college? What have you not heard us mention on this show? And our audience would be served by them knowing about it. That's the entire premise for this show. And I've done the setup. Welcome to the ultimate crowdsourced personal finance show. This is Choose FI.
You're listening to Choose FI Radio. The blueprint for financial independence lives here. If you're looking to unlock the secrets to financial independence and early retirement, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and join a community of like-minded people who are getting off the hamster wheel and taking control of their lives in the pursuit of financial independence. Choose FI, your home for financial independence online.
All right, MK, that was a very long setup, but it was all for the greater good. And that was to say that we have delivered. We put the request out. What was the feedback?
Well, we had a lot of feedback come in, specifically from episode 163, when we asked for feedback on tips to get free tuition, discounted books. How can we make this secondary education, this college education, trade school education, less expensive, because the rising costs are really troublesome to people? And we also reached way back into the mailbag, into the corners of that big old canvas bag that maybe a few of your notes got stuck in. Yeah, and we found a lot of really great tips that we hadn't actually called out yet. Ooh. So we have a lot of great details from the community. And I'll just jump right in and I'll say, Austin, come on down. He's got a great tip for us. So Austin writes, hey, Choose FI, wanted to share how I am finishing my 4-year degree for free. I work for a telecommunications company in the US that offers $8,000 a year for tuition towards a degree, but all the college programs I looked at cost way more unless I took only a few classes a year. I found an accredited college, Western Governors University, that costs a little over $6,000 a year, no matter how many credits I take. One semester, I completed 32 credits because all of the classwork is done at my pace. I can leverage my work experience to pass classes quicker since it uses a competency-based model. So once I prove I know the content, I can move right on to the next class. It's obviously not the perfect program for everyone, but I'm guessing there's a few people in your audience that would benefit from it. So way to go, Austin. I mean, if you think about it, college is supposed to really show your competency in a certain profession or an aptitude for a certain skill. So that sounds like an awesome way that he's getting a free degree.
Wow, that's fantastic. Brad, I'm excited for your feedback on this, but I realize we didn't bring you into the episode early enough. Are you doing okay, man? Is everything okay?
Yeah, doing quite well. And certainly even better after hearing Austin's little win here, or college hack, I should say. I love that, done at my own pace, right? I mean, how many of us, it's limiting beliefs, maybe on the part of college, that college students should take 15 semester credits, right? Like, that's what most people take. Sometimes you take 12, sometimes maybe you take 18. But man, Austin, 32 credits. I mean, that's an entire year's worth. That's more than a quarter of most college degrees. And I mean, amazing for $6,000.
Yeah, it's interesting. I wonder if we'll have anybody really talk about CLEP testing strategies today, just because that's something I know we haven't spent a lot of time talking about. And it uses that competency test-based model where you can actually test out, in many cases, of those credits. So MK, what's next?
Well, I will say maybe to the CLEP testing. We'll leave everybody on the edge of their seat there.
Don't close that loop. Don't close that loop.
So the next item comes from Jay, and actually these two are related. So Jay wrote in to share a college hack of going through the military academies in the US for a free degree. And then after that, we'll have a tip about military ROTC scholarships. So these are both two pathways for college students to be able to get their tuition fully paid for or discounted. But the first one comes from Jay. She writes, "Greetings. I sent a tweet to you about a free college opportunity. I have not given your most recent podcast a listen quite yet, but the title made me think of this. Please keep my tweet and this email anonymous." So do not know their full name, do not know any of it. So much of getting to FI is starting off on the right path, or at least not falling behind. A huge way people fall behind is college debt. This is where the US service academies provide a huge opportunity. Schools like the Naval Academy, where the military guide went, the Air Force Academy, West Point, as well as the Coast Guard Academy and Merchant Marine Academy provide tuition-free education, but the benefits don't stop there. While a student cadet or midshipman typically earns about $1,000 a month, a large portion of that goes to pay for uniforms and books, but zero of it goes to pay for tuition or boarding. So it was a huge win relative to paying for school. Beyond that, students get a world-class education, incredible leadership training, and experiences beyond most college campuses. When I went to the U.S. Air Force Academy, I got a free 3 weeks of skydiving, ooh, a summer research trip to Europe where I got paid an additional food stipend, and countless other amazing opportunities. The schools are not for everyone. Admissions is tough, and the day-to-day life is even tougher, but it launched me and many others to successful careers. Upon graduating and commissioning as officers, most cadets or mids go off to their first assignment making more than $80,000 when you factor in their housing and food allowances, with basically guaranteed promotions at the 2-year point and 4-year point. Depending on where you are stationed, by that point, you can easily be making over $100,000 with a portion of your income already tax-free and with access to the incredibly cheap thrift savings plan and other military perks. The worst thing about the academies is that so few people know about them. People shouldn't go for them for financial reasons, but it is a huge plus. Upon graduating, students incur a 5-year debt of service, but the way I see it is that I'm guaranteed a job for 5 years. So if you go to pilot training or other expensive training, that commitment can grow, but so do the opportunities outside of the military afterwards. The military has paid every penny of my undergrad, master's, and doctorate degrees, and to repay them, I have to do a job I love and make great money. I think I'm okay with that bargain. So this is all from a young officer hoping to one day be FI. So this was a really great detail of their college hack, going to the military academy.
Yeah, and it's not to say there's not a price being paid when you join the military. I mean, that's a really, really big commitment. But to not consider it, that's a huge blind spot. That's an incredible package that they put together. And if you do go into military, regardless of whether it's enlisted or officer, if you know the rules, you are given all the tools you need that when you finish your term of service, you could never have to work again. We have seen example after example of that. There's some fantastic financial tools available to support you on your path.
Yep. And our next tip came from AJ about the military ROTC scholarship, which is different. So that's instead of going to one of the academies, it's going to a traditional 4-year university on a military scholarship. So AJ for this one writes, "I went through college on a Navy ROTC scholarship that offered full tuition. We also got small stipends for books and uniforms. I'm sure this is not for everyone as you agree to join the Navy for a minimum of 5 years after college, but some would say that's just good job security." So again, you're not only getting college paid for, you're getting a job, which is really tough to guarantee in any economy. So AJ writes, "I commissioned in 2013 and I'm still in the Navy since I went the pilot route. It's not my favorite thing in the world, but I'm grateful for the many benefits it's given my family and I so far. If you are considering becoming a naval officer, the best way to go is through the ROTC option in their opinion. My husband went to college on a SMART scholarship, which I think you've touched on before. He had 2 years of college fully paid for, an internship, a stipend, and a guaranteed job working for the government for 2 years after school." So it seems like AJ and her husband just had a great duo of saving on college there.
Yeah, that is incredible. And I like how we highlighted both the military academies and ROTC. So these are two of the most popular options to, I guess, end up as officers in one of the military branches. And actually, a good buddy of mine was in the Army ROTC at the University of Richmond with me. And I know I've followed his career. And, you know, this is an incredible way to, like they said, get college for free. I think the vast majority of it, if not all 4 years, if you know going in that you're doing ROTC, but to come out as an officer in whatever branch you're in, and it's onward and upward from there. I know my friend is a lieutenant colonel at this point, and yeah, it's just, it's really cool. So for people, obviously, like the prior hack mentioned, you should not be doing this for financial reasons, right? Clearly don't join the military for financial reasons, but if you are inclined to join the military already, these are just incredible, incredible options. So look into both of them.
And I think one of the reasons this conversation is so compelling is that what we're effectively talking about is reclaiming the lost decade. The lost decade basically describes these postgraduate years where you're just trying to clean up the student loans. You're just trying to get back to a net worth of zero where you were before you started college. Now you're like, oh, finally, I've paid off all my debts. And now finally, I'm making forward progress. And if between the strategies mentioned up to this point and the other ones that we're going to talk about, if you can flip that on its head and not have student loans, be making income right out the gate. I mean, when we're talking about 5-year commitments or 10-year commitments, there's a very reasonable chance that you are either at the doorstep of financial independence. You've long since passed that Coast Fi number where you could never save another penny again. And your, you know, traditional retirement age self will have a better net worth than all of your other peers that didn't take this path. Like, even if you were to never save a penny, 30 and beyond, the work that you front loaded, the investments that you got rolling for you that early on in your career are enough to carry you far beyond where all of your peers will be. So this is the power of avoiding that lost decade between 20 and 30, where you're just trying to clean up student loan debt and actually get started building wealth. All right, let's switch gears. I believe you have a voicemail for us. You want to tell us a little bit more, MK?
Yeah, so this voicemail comes to us from Joe, who is a community college professor. So he got multiple college degrees without taking out any student loans. I'm really interested for the community to hear this one.
Hey, Brad and Jonathan. My name is Joe, and I'm a community college professor. And I know you guys love stories about college hacks, so I thought I would give you a quick rundown of how I was able to get 5 college degrees without taking out any student loans. So that is, I got 2 bachelor's degrees, 2 master's degrees, and a doctorate without ever having to take out any student loans, graduating totally debt-free and with a little money in my pocket. So when I graduated high school, I was a pretty good student, and I wanted to go to a state school for music education and mathematics. So I had my choice of a few different schools, but I ended up going to the school that was trying to increase its student enrollment size and was also trying to increase its prestigiousness a little bit with adding some higher achieving students. So they offered a great scholarship. If you've got a particular score on the ACT or the SAT, you basically had a full tuition, full room, and full board scholarship. So I had all my tuition covered. I had a dorm fully paid for, and then every semester I had a meal plan. So I did that for the first 4 years. I went to that school specifically because of that scholarship. And again, they were competing with some of the larger schools, so that's why they were offering such a great scholarship. After the 4th year, I finished my music education degree. I needed a 5th year to finish up the math degree. My scholarship did expire, but I was able to do some odd jobs, teach some music lessons, play in some bands and play music and teach, like tutor some math in the mathematics department. I was able to cover my living expenses. I did have to pay tuition out of pocket that first semester of the 5th year. But it wasn't too expensive because it was an in-state school. So it was around $2,000 a semester, I believe. But the nice thing is the second semester, I actually got another scholarship because I had been volunteering writing for the school newspaper. So the second semester, they said, hey, if you stay on, we'll give you a scholarship and help pay your tuition. So it pretty much covered my tuition that second semester of the 5th year, which was great. After that, I graduated with a mathematics bachelor's degree, decided to do a master's degree in mathematics, went to another university. And if you go into the STEM field, you shouldn't have to pay for a graduate degree. The reason is because most of them need teaching assistants to teach mathematics courses or other kinds of science courses. So I got a teaching assistantship teaching two classes a semester of undergraduate mathematics courses while I was taking my other classes. It paid all of my tuition, and then it also paid a living stipend of around $2,000 a month. So pretty good. So I did that for 2 years, and then I graduated with a master's in mathematics. Then I decided to go back into music. I went to another state university out of state where I did my master's and my doctorate in music performance. Now, unfortunately, the arts, they do have teaching assistantships, but not nearly as many of them. So I did not have access to a music teaching assistantship, but I scoured around the other departments on campus and actually found out that the math department needed more graduate teaching assistants to cover all of their math classes. So usually what happens is the professors teach a good bulk of the classes, but then they use graduate students to teach some other undergraduate classes. Well, they ran out of math graduate students because there's so many math classes needed on this campus. The school had about 50,000 students that they started seeing if other people in other departments had the credentials to teach some math classes. So me having the master's in math, that was great. I was able to go in, and while I was working on my music degree, again, taught one or two classes a semester, totally covered my out-of-state tuition, which I believe was about $12,000 a semester, and then paid me a living stipend of about $7,000 or $8,000 a semester, which was totally enough to get an apartment and survive on. The nice thing about it also was that I had my master's degree at that time, so I was also eligible to teach some adjunct courses at some of the other local state colleges and universities, and so I could supplement that income a bit, especially during the summers where I didn't have the teaching assistantship. So that's kind of it. Hopefully that's helpful to some of your younger listeners who are either in high school still, or if they're undergraduates thinking about going to graduate school. There are ways to pay for it so that you never have to take out any loans. I actually graduated with a little bit of money in the bank, and not having the loans has been huge. Plus, when I went for my first teaching job, which is what I do right now, I had about 8 years of teaching experience already. I had probably taught about 45 or 50 classes. So that kind of helped bring my name to the top of the resume stack, I like to believe. All right. Appreciate you guys. Appreciate everything you guys are doing. And hope this is helpful to some of your listeners.
Wow. That's a lot of degrees, Brad.
Yeah, that's a whole heck of a lot of degrees. And yeah, obviously, congrats to Joe. And that just provides like a nice framework. I think that's the big takeaway from that voicemail, is like these teaching assistantships, like you should be considering them. If you're going back for more degrees, there are many, many ways to get them for free or close to free. So yeah, Joe, thank you very much.
You mentioned the word framework there. I'd love to kind of walk through like my notes on what I think the framework is going into the rest of these, and just see if there's something that's outside of that. Because I think if it falls within the framework, then we know, our here's what we need to continue to flesh out. Like, there's probably a lot of variety inside the categories. But my strategies, as I'm seeing it, it's number one, game out the ACT, SAT. Number two, look for unique cohorts. So in the past, we've talked about caddy scholarship, firefighter. Like, what's the unique cohort that you can fit into that has a scholarship opportunity? Three is the military approach with a couple of variations therein. Four is turn the scholarship application process into a full-time job. We've had people talk about in the past how you just build an application production machine, and it's just you're going to get some percentage there. Figure out what your story is and do that better. The next one, I'm losing the numbers here. The next one is the needs-based. We'll get into that, but like financial need, you know, and there's a whole process there in figuring out what that calculation might actually look like. We just mentioned test out as another alternative. So CLEP testing and other variations of that. And then, you know, the non-traditional route. It'll be interesting to see if there's something outside of that, or if those are fleshing out kind of this general framework that you mentioned. MK, what's next?
Okay. Well, next we have a tip coming from Rachel. Really helpful college hacking tip here. So she says, I went to high school in Kentucky and did the Kentucky Governor's School program the summer between my junior and senior years. Anyone who attends the program gets automatic scholarships to Kentucky colleges and universities if they meet certain ACT and GPA requirements. Since the Governor's School program is pretty selective, generally you'll meet those requirements if you attend. I know both the University of Kentucky and University of Louisville offer full tuition scholarships to alumni. She provides a list here, so we can link that in the show notes, but she says, here's a list of offered scholarships. They are the minimum guarantees. You may actually qualify for even more based on your application. Kentucky seems to have the most scholarship offerings for their governor's school participants. I tried to figure out if Virginia, where I live now, has something similar, but their website doesn't have any specific details. Here's the shortlist I found from a national group. And she also gave us that link as well for the National Governor School organization there. So really helpful tip. And again, if you're already, you know, academically doing well enough to qualify for this, she's saying chances are you're going to qualify for the scholarship. So really great tip there, Rachel. Thank you.
Yeah, that's cool. And I know Kim from the Frugal Engineers talked about this on episode 158. She lived in Myrtle Beach and she went to a governor's school for high school there in South Carolina. So I think this is a program that exists in certainly many states. I don't know if all, but yeah, that's another episode to check out if you're interested.
And it would be interesting to talk about, you know, you look at the state level, different states do have programs that are known to individuals in the state, but if you're a transplant, or you just didn't come across that information, just knowing what applies, like Brad in our state, Virginia, the guaranteed admissions program in Florida and Georgia, the variations of the lottery scholarship. I think it's called the Hope Scholarship and maybe Bright Scholarship, something like
Bright Futures.
Bright Futures.
That's how Jason made money on college. Yeah.
Nice. There. So you have something there. So your state, you know, there's more than three states, may have some variation of that program. It would be nice to kind of aggregate those just so you know kind of what the general framework is, the paths of least resistance, and use that as a starting place and do your decision-making from there.
All right, MK, we've got a voicemail from Rob on negotiating college prices.
Hey, Brad and Jonathan, it's Rob here from Maryland. I was just listening to the episode with Angela, and I wanted to back up what she said about being able to negotiate the cost of college. As someone who hacked the cost of graduate school by getting a graduate assistant position, I was able to save about $30,000 and actually got paid a stipend to go to grad school and coach women's soccer. But what we always encouraged our athletes to do was, since we were a D3 school and couldn't offer athletic funding, we always said to them, go back to admissions in like March or April if you still haven't decided on a college, and tell them that you are sitting on the fence, but you really want to come, but you need something to happen with the financial package to make it happen. You can always say, like, I've got another college that's maybe offering a better package, or this is what my means are. Can you find a way to make this happen? And more often than not, they want you to come to that school because they want your money and would prefer to have that than not have you at all. So certainly go to them and say, like, this is what we have, this is what we want, and this is what we need, and see, are they willing to meet you halfway or even give you what you're looking for? Best of luck, everyone. Bye.
Now, this is really interesting, Brad, because what you have talked about in the past is just the fact that the list price, maybe in many, it's like MSRP on a car. Nobody's paying it, right? Except for the people that are just willing to pay it without questioning it. The actual price of college are what people are willing to pay. And a college would rather have some money than no money in some cases. So if their books are full and they have students coming out of their ears and they can't, you know, then your chances of negotiating that are going to be slim to none. On the flip side of that, we're living in a post-COVID world. Tuition, the actual demand for college this fall, who the heck knows what it's actually going to be? And a college might find themselves in April, you know, the timeline that Rob was describing there, really wanting a student at even a discounted or reduced cost as opposed to not having that student on campus.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, the rack rate, to kind of make it similar to hotels, very few people pay the actual rack rate for college prices. And to your point, this year of all years, and maybe going forward, who knows what the landscape is going to look like, but you have negotiating power. And certainly the better student you are or your child is, the more negotiating power you have even still. And when we consider like who generally does, like when you look at the actual economics of higher education, the people who are generally paying that full rack rate are international students in many cases. If you look at the breakdown, certainly at many of the elite colleges, and a lot of those people aren't showing up this fall. They aren't allowed, or they're not coming. And there is a frantic kind of frenzy going on here of how do we fill these spots? That's going to trickle down from the top tier to the second tier schools, down to third, and, you know, et cetera. And there's going to be a lot of negotiating power. Like we've talked about here on the podcast, everything is negotiable. You just can't be shy. I think so many of us, certainly in the US, we're nervous. We're shy to negotiate. I know I am personally. And it's just something you have to get over, especially when you're talking about something that's $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 a year. just negotiate. You never know what that's going to turn into over 4 years and then compounded over a lifetime, right?
There's some powerful points in there, man. There really are. And yeah, you're right. This is the ultimate petri dish for the test of this. We have never seen a time like this fall. There is a giant question mark beside admissions for this fall. Every admissions department is on pins and needles. And you know what most of them want to do? They just want to make it to next year. They will do anything to get the numbers where the, you know, at a decent amount just to make it till next year, because there'll be less unknowns then. So if this is your year, you are in the driver's seat. You absolutely are.
All right, MK, what do we have next?
So next we have a great tip that came in from Sherry, and she has, I guess, more of a comment for anybody who's listening who may have a say in how scholarship money is dispersed. So Sherry writes, I'm wondering if writing this will help anything, but it's been on my mind, so here goes. Last spring, I was at a ceremony for the high school seniors who had won scholarships. Some kids did get the four-year scholarships. Others just got money towards school. My daughter is going to community college for 2 years before transferring to a four-year college. It makes me sad that there aren't many scholarships for kids who do really well at community college to help them at a four-year university when they transfer. These kids are doing the fiscally responsible thing, and yet so much money is paid out to kids for their freshman year at a four-year school. The four-year scholarships I saw that were awarded could help two kids for their last year in school instead of one. Anyway, if you are involved in an organization that gives out money, encourage them to focus on the kids who are transfer students. So this was a Facebook comment. So she's saying a few people did respond with instances where they themselves received scholarships that they could put towards community college or found scholarships for their specific community college. So that is one hack there, is look for that specific community college and what scholarships are available to that institution. So we know that they're out there. They may just not exist for the one you're looking for, but there may be another one nearby that could be the right one for you. So again, that little bit of extra work, again, these kids are doing the financially responsible thing. It'd be great if they could get more of that scholarship money too.
Yeah, MK, it's all about normalizing it. Right. And I think that's what we've tried to do over the nearly 4 years that this podcast has existed. We've tried to normalize making community college an option, because sadly, I know this is how I grew up in the high school that I went to. Like, that was not something that somebody in the top 10 or 20% of their graduating class would do, because they'd be, oh, what are the neighbors going to think? All this other keeping up with the Joneses nonsense that we have rejected as a Phi community. Right. And I think this is something that I've opened my eyes to. And Jonathan mentioned this before. In Virginia, we have a guaranteed admissions program where if you go to a community college and you get a certain GPA, it doesn't have to be a 4.0. I think it's like a 3.4. And you take some very specific classes, you are guaranteed admissions into any Virginia State University, including two of the best in the entire country, the University of Virginia and the College of William and Mary. And that's among others, right? Virginia Tech. Jonathan, shout out to you over there.
Thank you.
Certainly a fantastic school. I mean, there are James Madison, there are lots of options, right? So this might exist in your state. And again, just kind of final word for me on this is normalizing community college. It is such a smart financial decision. And many of us don't know what we're doing when we're 18 and we're going to a college spending 60 grand a year. Why not do it? And instead of a gap year, maybe go to community college, take some entry level courses and try to figure out what you want to do. And then when you go to that 4-year university, you can really hone in on it and get all the value from the other students and these world class professors in many cases. So, yeah, I really love this. And my eyes have been opened.
You know, Brad, it's interesting. You mentioned that anecdotally, but that was just the clear path for my family. It was normalized because there wasn't another option. My brother did the ROTC. So that was his path, went to Virginia Tech, ROTC, full scholarship. The rest of the kids in the family, we did the community college. My dad is a community college professor. This is just what you did. And in retrospect, there's so many additional reasons. When you go to the community college for 2 years, you're bypassing the need to even do an SAT or ACT. I think I took it one time. I'm not going to say what my score was on that particular exam, but it didn't really matter, because as long as you graduated TCC with, I believe, a 3.5, you're guaranteed admission. When you look at the actually cost per credit, now clearly there's a big difference between when I went and now, but I just quickly looked up here in Richmond, we have J. Sarge at Reynolds Community College. if you could do a little compare and contrast for in-state residents, $158 per credit for J. Sargent Reynolds. For UVA, another great state college, $451 per credit. If you're an out-of-state student, it balloons up to $1,500 per credit. So that means for a three-credit class, you're looking at $5,000. Anyways, all that being said, normalizing community college is a big deal, but it's not without risk. The attrition rate on community college is absurdly high, where kids just don't take it seriously, or they don't lean in, and they just stop going to class, stop showing up. My dad, as a community college professor, can share kind of some of the horror stories of just they showed up for the first class, they never showed up again. I'm sure this happens everywhere, but if you don't treat it as the real deal, or you're just doing a little test run or whatever, then you're just wasting everybody's time, including yours. So this is part of it. Like, we don't, just because you're making the right choice to do something for your budget and go to a community college at one third of the cost per credit, you need to then still treat this like this is the real deal. There's so much money to be saved here. Community college is part of your plan. It's a building block. And you know what's funny is, and I don't think people appreciate this until maybe they're on the other side, my undergraduate degree, my bachelor's degree, is from Virginia Tech. That's my alma mater. I don't have a two-year degree from a community college and a two-year degree from Virginia Tech, leaving me at some sort of half hybrid. I have a four-year degree from Virginia Tech, of which I did the first 2 years at the local community college. And the only other little clutch point I would pay out here is, like, you don't just go to the community college and take any course that you want. If you want to extract maximum value from your community college, you work with your guidance counselor and admissions officer at the four-year school you want to go to, and you one for one pick out the classes that transfer for the degree that you want. You don't take anything just out of curiosity, just because, like, that's a massive investment of your money and time. If your goal is to end up at the four-year school, what you're doing is just taking the classes that will transfer there at a massively discounted rack rate price. So just a few strategies in my mind for someone considering doing this. Go have the conversations that the admissions office for the four-year school you want to go to, find out exactly what classes you should be taking, and take those, prioritize those. All right, next we got a tip from Jason. This is on Union Degrees. He says, "Hey, Brad and Jonathan, I've been looking into going back to college. And while I'm in a great paying union job with great medical benefits, I feel stuck with no advancement in my local area. I started looking into my employer's college tuition reimbursement program and learned that the union I belong to has a free college degree program through, link included, unionplus.org. This benefit is not only available to the member, but family members and extended family as well." Wow. "They have numerous associate's degree and low-cost bachelor's degree through Eastern Gateway Community College. So if there's any union members out there, go sign up for Union Plus and enjoy the benefits they offer. There are a lot more benefits than just free college." That's amazing, Brad.
That is absolutely amazing. Yeah, there's certainly many, many millions of people who are either in unions or family members. So yeah, I'm sure a lot of people can take advantage of this. Jason, thank you.
And that actually brings up a great point in terms of this framework that we were talking about, is employers being willing to pay for your degree, either your bachelor's, which I actually thought was less likely. Like, I was thinking when I led with this, I was thinking it was going to be more your graduate. So you got your job, you're in the degree, your employer has a benefit in you getting a more advanced degree. They will pay for you to go back. And it's something that you could look at when you're picking your prospective employer out. Before I just front load the cost of my master's degree, front load the cost of my doctorate, how about I consider a career path with an employer that'll actually pay for it? That's just another thing that I know we've heard from many people in our community. All right, next we got a voicemail from Renata calling in to share her experience. She heard the episode we did with Brian Uffinger, episode 114 of our podcast, which was really looking at the secrets for the admissions office at your colleges. That's a great episode if you're in the college planning process. We'll have that linked up, episode 114, and the companion episode 114R. You can go to chooseafi.com/114. This voicemail from Renata is further confirming how you can graduate college without student loans.
"Hey, Jonathan and Brad, this is Renata in Gilbert, Arizona. Hey, I just wanted to say that your episode 114 and 114R are fantastic. Totally agree with everything he was saying. And coming from experience with my daughter, is currently a sophomore in college, I agree wholeheartedly and love the message that you guys are sharing with us, in the sense that you can do it. You can save lots of money in the long run. My youngest is my third to go through college. The first two had no debt, but were not on scholarship. My youngest took the ACT the first time and scored a 27. She took it upon herself to grab some books and spent the summer, probably anywhere from 75 to 100 hours, practicing and retaking tests. And she retook the ACT and scored a 32. that score enabled her to get a full tuition scholarship to a four-year university, state university. And with that and some financial aid and some other grants, she is on her way to graduating in 2 years with no debt whatsoever. So it is possible. And so total encouragement to your listeners that this is something that can be done. Granted, she did have a fantastic GPA, and also she did dual enrollment classes, which allows her, she walked into her four-year university with over 40 college credits. What that allows her to do is she gets 8 semesters paid for with her scholarship, so she will actually be able to take classes into her master's program with that four-year scholarship. So again, encouragement to all your listeners. It can be done. It is possible. And thank you again for all you do and spreading this incredible message.
Wow, Brad.
Yeah, I think you see me shaking my head here as I'm listening to that and thinking back to how stupid I was when I was 17, because I did reasonably well on the ACT and SAT.
What does reasonably well mean for you? I always know when there's like a humble brag going on in the background. Yeah. What was your number, man?
Oh, no.
You brought it up. Sure. It's fair game now.
All right. Yeah, I guess. So I got, I think, right around that 31, 32 on the ACT. And I think I got like a 15-10 on the SAT. So, yeah, I probably could have gotten a full scholarship. And I just was too stupid to even realize that that existed. So, man, you think back to...
Smart, what a blind spot.
Yeah, you would. Yeah, huge blind spot. And, you know, it's funny because I think looking back, so my parents, while they by no means are wealthy, they had saved some money for us for college. And I think I looked at that and said, okay, I can come out without student loan debt.
Yes.
But I didn't look at, okay, what's the other option, right? If I had gotten college for free, I'm sure I could have worked out an arrangement to either split that money or maybe potentially get most or all of it to set up my net worth at 22 years old. So it's interesting when you're looking myopically just at, okay, I don't want student loan debt, which is great. Obviously, it's admirable and put me well ahead of many people, but I didn't look at the bigger picture. So yeah, certainly by any definition, a missed opportunity.
No, I mean, what you just said is actually, I know we have more tips, but just to intersect here, because this episode is one that for like, it'll be so valuable for the rest of the duration of this show. It'd be one you point back to. It's worth it. What you just said is the exact reason that I am cautious before overfunding my 529, before overfunding my child's education fund. We have a list. We're just getting started. We have voicemail and tip after tip after tip of how you can look at the problem a little bit more creatively, and you can do this for less, if not free. I know you could save any amount of money, $100,000, $200,000, $300,000, whatever it is to make sure your kids have the great education, you could save that. But what is the perverse incentive of doing so? It's that you never have to think about this type of creative conversation. It's worth so much. You know, there's so much more that you could be doing with this. So with all those reasons and so many more tips to go, I'm glad, Brad, that you shared your own personal experience here.
Yeah. And another great thing that Renata pointed out with her daughter getting so many credits that it was able to cover the full scholarship. That's great. So with my own college experience, I came in with enough credits that I was technically a sophomore by credit while I was still in my first year of college. So my freshman year. So at first I was like, well, this is great. I could maybe get a second major. I could add a second minor. Now I can get into certain courses. It was based on your class rank, who got to get in first. So courses that were filling up quickly, I could get in. I was like, this is great. Talking with my advisor about the options. And then of course, they weren't going to volunteer this information. But at my school, all freshmen were required to have the unlimited, deluxe, best meal plan you can imagine. And the reason the university gave was so that we focused on studying, not on, you know, meal prep or, they wanted us to focus on studies. They really wanted our money, let's be honest. But for me as a student, I was like, I just eat cereal. Like I can just buy some Frosted Flakes. Like I don't need this.
They're
so
delicious.
I asked, I was like, oh, yeah, they are. They're magically. Oh no, that's Lucky Charms. They're magically delicious. Anyways, so I asked her, I was like, oh, can I opt out of the freshman meal plan then? And she was like, I think, yeah, you can. And so what I did is I took the money that would have been for that room and board for that meal plan for that term. I opted down to one lower. I still didn't want to do a lot of cooking for myself, but I was like, I don't need unlimited meals all day. I'd maybe need lunch and dinner. I was able to get some dollars on my dining card so I could actually go to different restaurants around campus that were more convenient to where I was living. And so I ended up saving a couple $1,000s just for that one term by opting down to another meal plan. So that's one thing to consider too. If you are getting extra credits and you are no longer a freshman by credit earlier, you may be able to opt out of extra fees that are associated with freshman year. So that's always a question to ask, because chances are the university isn't going to be like, oh, hey, by the way, you don't have to pay this fee anymore. You usually have to ask. And I'm glad that I did, because I just bought my own Frosted Flakes and I saved a couple $1,000s.
They're great. That's what I was looking for. They're great. You know, one other thing you mentioned there, and it was in Renata, was the dual enrollment. And actually, Brad, I'm curious. So dual enrollment is where you're in high school and the classes you're taking as part of your high school or may really count also for college credit. So a high school student taking college credit classes, getting credit for both high school and college at the same time. This can be paired with the community college strategy or it can be paired with a four-year strategy. Brad, how common is this? Are you seeing this as an option for your kids as they start to approach high school? Like, what is the availability of dual enrollment now?
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely anecdotally seen individual courses. I don't know. And maybe you've seen this, but more like full-time high school as a dual enrollment, that I haven't seen, but I've seen individual courses. I know I did that way back in the day when I was in high school. I took a course through Syracuse University, which was hundreds of miles away. It wasn't relevant. I wasn't at Syracuse, but it was an English course that I took my senior year. And I think I wound up getting actually 4 college credits for it at the University of Richmond, where I ultimately went. So, I mean, that was an amazing, amazing thing to get 4 credits just for taking my high school English class.
Okay. And our next tip comes from one of our listeners, Nicole, and she writes in, she says, love your podcast. I'm listening to the free resources for K-12 teachers and wanted to share a higher ed one. There are a couple of university nonprofits that are publishing free open source, so not subject to copyright, college textbooks. So this is openstax.org, and that's open, as you would normally spell it, O-P-E-N, Stacks, S-T-A-X. We'll have the link as well in the show notes. Anyone can access these books online for free. So even if someone just wants to learn about a subject, it's a great resource. For those in college, it's a bit trickier because you're usually assigned a particular book by your professor. But a lot of colleges have implemented a search filter or a marking system so students can identify which professors use free books. If not, students should contact the provost office to find out which professors are using free books. This can easily save students $800 or more per semester.
Wow, that's amazing. And Nicole also wrote in with another option, which is open.umn.edu/open textbooks. So yeah, a couple different options here. And that's amazing. I mean, this can be a huge savings. So thank you, Nicole.
So we talked to Anthony Gary, I believe that was episode 138. And in that episode, Anthony was really leaning into how powerful becoming a resident advisor and RA was as a source of income. It's really easy and it'll totally line up. I think he called it going to college for profit in his case, where he stacked a few of these tips together. Austin just reached out and said, my senior year in high school, I applied for several scholarships and received several, but I never got a full ride to the university that I wanted to attend. Instead, I received a full ride to a community college for 2 years. Now, during my time there, I was a RA, where that scholarship covers your cost for a dormitory. I also had excellent grades during my time there, so I was able to apply for and receive the Phi Theta Kappa scholarship, which in my state, Mississippi, is an $8,000 scholarship, $2,000 a semester towards the university I was going to transfer to. My point is, even if you don't receive a full ride to a university, apply to community college. Go there. Work really hard and apply for transfer scholarships towards your university. I took that route and all of my school was covered by scholarships and grants. I discourage student loans, but I understand that some people need them for college, but thank you for all you're doing with the show. Yep, totally agreed. Community college, look at RAs, look at your options, normalize community college. The key here is that you don't spend the years between 20 and 30 just paying back student loans, if you can do the planning ahead of time. All right, next, MK, we have a tip on leveraging Starbucks, I believe.
Yeah, Starbucks can save you money. You heard it here first.
Latte factor, kiss my tail.
Yeah. So Millie wrote in and said she was just listening to episode 163 and would like to contribute an idea for college that she didn't think has been brought up before. She writes, "My daughter is a Starbucks barista working 20 hours a week. Starbucks will pay for her to attend online Arizona State University and graduate with an Arizona State University diploma. She will take the same classes taught online by the same professors that teach on campus. She is under no obligation after graduation to continue working for Starbucks. Some of the beautiful parts of this plan are the scholarship is based on the fact that you are an employee and not on any track record of grades that you may have gotten in previous school or college courses or financial need. The scholarship is for everyone who works a minimum of 20 hours on average per week at Starbucks. You do not have to compete with fellow employees to get it. Everyone's eligible. As you may know, bachelor's degrees are based on 120 hours of college credit. Starbucks understands that not everybody excels all the time in every class, and their program will pay up to 135 college hours. So if you maybe have to retake a class, take an extra class, maybe change your major, you're getting a little extra there, giving a bit of cushion in case life throws you a bit of a curveball, or you just have a bit of trouble in a class along the way. If you have to drop a class or you don't do well enough and you have to retake it, it also helps there. Starbucks will still reimburse you for the cost of that class up to 135 hours. They do not require that you take a certain number of classes each semester. You can progress through the coursework as quickly or as slowly as you need to. There are other benefits I would be happy to get into if you're interested. There are a couple of things to keep in mind. Anyone who already has a bachelor's degree is not eligible. Starbucks will pay tuition and mandatory fees, and you will pick up the cost of books and other supplies. So books are on you, but again, we just heard about OpenStax, so hopefully that's a non-starter there. The tuition assistance is provided in the form of a 40% discount when you pay your tuition each semester, and then a payroll reimbursement upon completion each semester of the tuition and fees that you paid. There are some small tax implications to keep in mind, but she thinks that they're pretty small there. ASU, so Arizona State University, offers a multitude of online degrees to choose from and assigns a success coach to each Starbucks student to help handle any issues that may come up along the way. Also, if you cannot qualify for acceptance to Arizona State University, the Starbucks program will put you through the prep classes at the university to get you up to speed so that you can get accepted. Big wins here are that you don't have to be an outperformer in your high school and you don't have to prove financial need. So she says, my daughter just started the program, so I will report back on how things go. At this point, we are impressed with both Starbucks program and Arizona State University. So that sounds like a pretty sweet deal.
Wow.
Yeah, that's amazing. I just did some Googling, and it looks like U.S. News and World Report actually has ASU in one of their top five in these online bachelor's degree programs. So this is pretty amazing. And I wonder also, I mean, we talked before about the changing college landscape. I suspect there are going to be many more top-tier universities starting to offer either completely online versions or hybrid versions. So sounds like ASU is way ahead of the game. And Starbucks, I mean, that's incredible. You work 20 hours a week and you can get this degree. So yeah, kudos all around. And Millie, thank you for writing in.
I think this actually highlights a really important point for people. If you're spending $300,000 to go to college, to get a college degree right now, that is not a good allocation of your resources for the vast majority of individuals. We are seeing increasing pressure on offering colleges. College should be free. College is a right. However you may feel about that, you're seeing that more and more. You're seeing the college model shift from the in-person to the online programs. That's increasingly shifting this college experience landscape, you know, which is kind of a lot of the verbiage that's used to sell it. It's not going to exist for your kids. If you have a young kid like I do, 2-3 years old, it's going to be an online model for the vast majority of individuals that are doing this. And so just keep that in mind. Once you have your college degree, for the vast, vast majority of individuals, the businesses that are the type of businesses that care about a college degree don't really care which one you got it from. And they're certainly not questioning you whether or not you went in person or they got it online. It's just be very, very cautious when you're just saying, well, we're going to start now while the kid's two and we're going to save up $300,000 and we're going to like not max out our 401ks to make sure that we have that 300K there so our kids can go to whatever college they want. It's bad planning. Under the guise of doing the right thing. All right, so I think we have one more tip that we want to share. And MK, I believe this is about co-ops and AP credits. I guess AP credits are kind of the other half of dual enrollment.
Yes. So Michelle wrote in and said, I went to college that had co-ops and was paid over $60,000 from them while at college. I graduated a year earlier than expected and had a job offer from my co-op. I don't work there anymore, but I was able to leverage the 18 months of internship when I applied for salary and negotiated my next job. Also, high school kids should opt for college credit classes instead of AP. I paid less than $2,000 for 28 college credits. Books were included in the cost. The classes were at my high school. I was given a college transcript from my community college. This saved me a year of my time at college. The AP classes were $95 for the opportunity to take a test that a college may accept the grade. Much higher stakes with the AP courses and much lower chances of them satisfying college requirements. My college only gave general course credit for scores of 5. So that's a perfect score. That's the highest score. Meanwhile, my college gave credit towards core classes when I had B's on the community college transcript. So she's saying it was actually more beneficial for her to do dual enrollment instead of the APs because the APs is a, you know, maybe they'll accept it, maybe they won't. So this was a good tip. Thanks, Michelle.
This is huge.
That is huge. And Jonathan, I think that answers the question that you threw at me earlier that I didn't really have a satisfactory answer for, which is, you know, I thought these were just kind of one-off classes potentially, but it looks like Michelle got 28 college credits in high school. So yeah, I mean, that certainly sounds like a year or more of her high school was dedicated towards these community college classes. That's brilliant.
Look, if you are a parent that's actively involved in your school system, I mean, first of all, just at a selfish level, Brad, we need to look up and see currently what our local county Henrico offers in terms of dual enrollment for the public school systems that our kids will be attending. If this is something that you need to lobby for, one of the best things that you can do is get other invested parents to see if there's a way that you can get more dual enrollment available for your kids as an option in high school. And I completely agree with Michelle's assessment here that if you can pick between AP credits, which I believe the main benefit of AP is that your GPA options are higher. So, you know, when you think about a GPA being on a 1-4 scale, basically, you suddenly are throwing a 5 in the mix, right? You got a 5. I got a 5 out of 4. So you can artificially increase your GPA beyond a 4.0, making you then more competitive. How much more powerful is it just to not, like, you still have to take the classes again in college with AP though. Instead, if you can bypass that and just get credit twice, one at the high school level and one at the college level, so much more valuable. And then the question that remains is how widespread and how commonly accepted is the dual enrollment programs? If we have local groups all across the country, if this is something that you can lobby for as a parent, as a community, you should be doing this. This will save you and your child, your community. It'll save you tons of money. There's no downside to this that I can see. So huge tip from Michelle here pointing this out. All right. So these were the tips that our community gave to us. I have a feeling we'll do another version of this. I really like the idea of the framework approach. There are different approaches. There's not an unlimited variety. You see the common themes. And then inside of each decision point, there's different ways of tackling that. But if we could build out this type of content, so you have this cheat sheet for doing college in a very cost-effective way, I'd love to continue to build that content out for you. I wanted to also point out, well, these are the tips that our community brought to the table. You also sent us your questions. And what we actually did is we took those into a live event to help you get those answered. MK, how can individuals that want to hear the community questions about college get that information?
So we had a live event on June 24th, a couple weeks ago, with Robert Farrington, Cody Berman, and of course, Brad and Jen were there as well, as they are for all of our Facebook Lives. So if you want to watch the replay of that, watch the questions that were answered that came in and also anything that came up during the live, you can head over to choosefi.com/live to watch all the past events, including that one, or also just on our Facebook page. So you can catch up on those and yeah, check out the answers.
Awesome. Now, this episode's coming out on Wednesday. This Friday, Brad and I have been kind of taking notes from what's on here. And we both have kids. Brad's kids are a little bit closer to college age as they're going to be going into high school. One of them's going to be going into high school here in the pretty near future. So he is really having to start really thinking about this in terms of concretes as opposed to just, oh, one day, you know, I think I know what I'll do, which is kind of where I am. But having said that, both of us, this upcoming Friday, we'll be pulling back the curtain and share with you kind of the general approach that we're taking from our two respective positions and just kind of sharing that with you. There's no absolutes here and things are fluid. Both of us reserve the right to change our mind 5 more times before we actually get to that date. But I think kind of hearing how we're taking this information, synthesizing it, and then figuring out the pieces that we're going to use will be of value for you. So stay tuned this Friday if that's interesting. Brad, any final thoughts here?
Yeah, this was a really good look at just a bunch of tips. And it's so nice to get this crowdsourced information, right? And undoubtedly, we could do an episode like this every year if we wanted to. I'm sure there are hundreds of other tips. And I think that would be fantastic, frankly, right? Like, this is such an important line item in so many people's budgets. And like we've talked about throughout this entire episode, it's a framework of thinking that so many of us, if we're not even understanding what's out there or what's even possible, what other people are doing, we don't know to even ask the questions, not less what questions to ask. So this, hopefully, it's getting the juices flowing, right? And getting you thinking about, how can I save money? So yeah, I'm absolutely thrilled by this episode.
All right. Now, I know there was a lot of data and information that came at you in this episode. If you want to access kind of the key takeaways from this episode, you can go to chooseify.com/230. That's chooseify.com/230. If you got value from today's episode, and if you've been getting value from the episodes up to this point, please just take a second and press subscribe on the platform you're listening to this on, whether or not that be Apple Podcasts or Spotify, iHeartRadio, Overcast, CastBox, Player FM. I know there's so many options. Press subscribe. It just lets the platform know you're getting value from the show. You want to be here when we produce additional content. If I can make one additional ask of you, it's just that if you know someone that would benefit from this type of framework building conversation about college, just share it with them, you know, and you might need to coach someone how to listen to a podcast in some cases, but this information is more valuable than more people that know about it. With that in mind, the fire is spreading, my friends. We'll see you next time as we continue to go down the road less traveled.
You've been listening to Choose FI Radio Podcast, where we help middle-class America build wealth, one life hack at a time.